Hello, everyone. Internet, Roto-World's Josh Norris here with another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. Just about a week left for this draft season. We have so much more content coming at you. You can check out my Team Needs 7-Round Mock Draft with Evan Silva over at RotoWorld.com. My latest mock draft over at RotoWorld.com. A bunch of videos over there as well. It's a fun time. Who else is having a fun time is my guest for this episode. I first met Eric Galco in, I think, 2012. I think he was 12 years old at the time. He works for Optimum Scouting, who you all should know very well, and writes one of the best draft pieces, I guess, every month, every 2 months, something like that, over on Sporting News. It was once referred to as State of the Draft, but just depends on what it's labeled as each time. It delves into some speculation, some buzz, some reporting. Kind of everything is kind of combined here during this draft season. And, Eric, that's kind of the topics I wanted to get into today, and I'm going to run through a number of them. But first, how's everything going, my man?
It's good, man. Yeah, 12 years old. I'll take it. I don't have much facial hair going on. So I know. I have a baby face, I know. But it's good, man. It's always fun when our draft guide's finished in late March, because then the rest of the draft season, you know, my opinion on these guys matters a little bit less, and my focus is talking with teams and people around the league and finding out what's going to happen. So now I know what should happen based on our grades. Now it's about what's going to happen on draft day.
And again, I want to emphasize that we're not saying everything we're going to talk about will happen, right? And just because something we talk about in depth doesn't happen doesn't mean it wasn't true. In many cases, these teams are making just 7, 8, 9 selections, and that's all that we see in terms of their evaluations. That's all we can judge them on or base reality on. But at many times, I mean, there are endless, countless stories of what almost happened in NFL draft rooms, that we could go on and on about those. But again, many things are close to happening or almost will happen, but just don't. And so, again, a few we might hit on now, and a few we'll probably miss on as well. Eric, we should talk about the quarterbacks to start. In your piece, you mentioned, and this is a link that I've been talking about a lot, but that Mitch Trubisky, actually, when he was considering entering the NFL, he actually was advised, one of the teams that he reached out to was the Buffalo Bills. So there's obviously an already connection that has started there, formed there, even from a few months ago.
Exactly. And that kind of happened in the November, December time period when, you know, kind of his grades, I guess, had gone from who is this guy to is this guy a first round pick? And he had done his due diligence. He did a great job. If I remember back, he didn't declare right away. He asked a lot of people and really took his time in talking with agents and whomever about the process. So he wasn't rushing himself to do so, but the Bills were maybe the first team, one of the first teams for sure, that he had spoken with. And he has a connection there to the Bills organization where he reached out to them and they kind of consulted a little bit on where he might go. And that's, I think, where it started, is that, you know, at that point in that November, December time period, he had been looked at as not just a guy who could declare for the draft, but maybe the best quarterback in the class. He went to the Bills, and now Mitch Trubisky's in the NFL draft. That connection is where it had started. I think it's kind of grown over this time period. But they're one of the teams who started out the process thinking, yes, we believe he's in consideration, if not already, the first quarterback in this draft class. And as far as we can tell, in the interviews he did at the combine were good. Some of them were just okay. Some of them were great. But he hasn't anything this draft season to hurt his draft grade. So if the Bills liked him back in November, it's clear they still like him now. And I believe, from all I've been told, he is their top quarterback on their board, almost no question. And they'd love to get him.
And they were one of the teams, well, the Bills were a team that visited Trubisky on campus. I mean, the owner went down and looked at him. And that's why, Eric, I keep bringing this up, because to me, and you know this, I think, living in the Philadelphia area, the Bills are completely copying the Eagles' blueprint of what they did prior to last year's draft to a T. I mean, Terry Pegula taking free time, weekend visits, going to see 20, 21-year-olds throwing against air. Like, he's not just doing that for fun. You know, like, they are absolutely invested in this quarterback class, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you mentioned the Eagles dynamic. The Eagles traded up with the Cleveland Browns last year, the second overall pick, to get Carson Wentz. That's the question now. I think the Bills, you know, many people have kind of put those pieces together. The Bills, like Mitch Trubisky, you know, since, like I said, back in November, December, they talked to him. And then November or February before the combine, certainly after the combine, they had met with him there, going to his workout. But now the question is, how high do you have to get to get Mitch Trubisky. And that's where it gets interesting now, because the Browns, I believe their ownership is in play. Hugh Jackson wants Myles Garrett, but other people in that organization, I would assume the ownership, are looking to get involved in Mitch Trubisky sweepstakes. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a real wild card when you ask people around the league if they'll take a quarterback. So the question before is, would they take him at 10? Now it's, do they go above 6, above the Jets? Do they have to get even higher to get Mitch Trubisky as their quarterback?
And I've heard some rumblings that the Titans might take a reduced price at number 5 just to move out, because they don't love their slot. Patrick Mahomes has been a hot topic for quite a while. I know you and Optimum Scouting have had him as the top quarterback for pretty much the entire process, if not even before then. Peter King and the MMQB said that his link has been strong to the Browns. It's been strong to the Arizona Cardinals. First, what have you heard with Mahomes? And second, I know that you also mentioned that with that Cardinals mention that Bruce Arians might not be as keen on adding a quarterback in the first round.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals are the team that has often been pegged for Patrick Mahomes because it's a vertical passing offense. They're a team that has Carson Palmer maybe a year or two late in finding his heir apparent, and they have to do so soon. I think we'll see some wrestling behind the scenes with Bruce Arians, who wants to keep winning now, and this team's not far away from being a Super Bowl contender, whereas Steve Keim, the GM, wants to find that quarterback of the future with or without Bruce Arians as the head coach for the next 3-4 years. So I think there'll be some wrestling there, and I think the way Peter King put it is that they like him a lot and might love him, might really want to take him at 13. I believe he will be there at 13. The Browns connection, and admittedly, I don't have as plugged in at the Cowns with Browns this year as I have been in years past, but I'm not sure he fits exactly what Hugh Jackson wants, but that's a team I think that at 12 could be a wild card. But really, 13, I think, is where Patrick Mahomes' projection goes, and I don't think he lasts much longer than there, because if he's not an Arizona Cardinal, or if a team wants to move other Cardinals, they will. If not, teams will be jostling for him in the teens just to make sure they don't miss their guy.
And let's talk about that like versus love conundrum that is being mentioned a lot. And it's prevalent because we hear from teams or some sources or whatever that, oh, we like this guy. But that doesn't necessarily lead us to believe that they'll take him in round one or even round two. Like, we have no idea where he fits among their vertical board, right? And so there's a huge difference in liking someone or absolutely loving them enough to make them a priority with one of their top few picks in the draft.
Yeah, and that's a lesson I learned back in 2013 when that quarterback class was as bad as it was. And, you know, a lot of teams liked Matt Barkley, and they liked Tyler Wilson, and they liked, you know, Ryan Nassib, but they didn't like him as a first-round guy or a second-round guy. And that's the gray area to figure out, because, you know, quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators can be excited about a quarterback because they feel they can work with those guys, just like O-line coaches are for offensive tackles every year, and they say, hey, I can make this guy a first-round worthy guy. But it's up to GM to decide, and especially a quarterback, GMs and head coaches, their fate is decided by if a quarterback they take in the first two rounds, especially in round one, and that's the question mark here. And I think it's less about Patrick Mahomes, because I think there's more deviation between the teams that love Mahomes and the teams that have third and fourth round grades, which I know some of those as well, and Deshaun Watson, because I think a lot of teams, and it reminds a lot of the Bridgewater, the Geno Smith discussions, a lot of teams like Deshaun Watson a lot, but they're not sure if he's worth a top 20 pick. So I think he's a better example of the like versus love dynamic, because I think every team feels Deshaun Watson is probably third or fourth round or third round pick at worst, and that's saying a lot because some teams have guys way lower. But every team likes Deshaun Watson and Mitch Trubisky and Nathan Peterman. Not every team is sold on Deshaun Watson as a top 20 pick, where I think Mahomes has some teams feel he's, you know, top 10 player in the draft. Some teams feel he's, you know, mid to late round guy.
Are there any other names that fit that? Maybe Davis Webb, who we're hearing more of, maybe even Nathan Peterman in the second round?
Yeah, I think Nathan Peterman's the example of a guy who's really well-liked around the league. And I think a lot of that is his ability to adapt quickly to the NFL level, and it gets overstated sometimes that guys are quick to adapt to the NFL, and people think pro-style offense means plug-and-play starter. I don't think it's quite as simple as that for Peterman, but his Senior Bowl was remarkably impressive, and there's a throw he made on the left hash mark from a three-step drop that I've heard multiple scouts I've talked to mention that throw, and I remember it. And it's decisions, quick decision-making, ability to adapt to a new offense. That's what the Senior Bowl really showed about Peterman, and that's what scouts thought they were going to see coming in, and they did. So I think he's checked so many boxes this draft process that Peterman's a favorite. I mentioned the Jaguars as a connection. I think if they want to go a quarterback in round two or three, he may be their ideal. But by round three, he'll be a target for every team that hasn't taken a quarterback yet in this draft.
Interesting. Out there, the Bears out there as well.
Yeah.
So we've heard positive buzz about Davis Webb. We've heard positive buzz about Nathan Peterman. All that we've heard is negative buzz about DeShone Kizer. It seems more and more likely, Eric, that he is at best quarterback 4, maybe even quarterback 5, and possibly quarterback 6.
Yeah.
Do you see him falling now to round 2? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if he did. The Texans, I know, have interest, but I don't think he'll be their pick at 25. And the Bears are another team that I know likes him a lot, and he may be their pick in round 2 or maybe trading up in the back end of round 1. But they like Deshaun Watson and other quarterbacks as well. I don't think any team has Kizer as one of their top 3 quarterbacks in this class.
And that's important. From. That's an important note, because it's not like you go into a draft class being like, hey, I like 4 or 5 quarterbacks, or really I like 3 quarterbacks. You basically have your guy or a maybe fallback option who you also like. It's a position that's very independent of others, that, you know, you might like some like we just talked about, but you only love 1 or 2, and it doesn't sound like from what you're saying that Kizer is anyone's.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's 2 or 3 teams that like Kizer a lot, but no one's going to reach up for him. No one feels that the demand is higher than what they'll get when they get their pick again. And you know, actually, I tweeted on Monday or Sunday about kind of Kizer maybe falling to mid to late round 2, and a scout texts me saying, hey, we like him a lot and we hope we can get him, but we're not sure if the top down will say yes on taking him in round 2. So there's a chance he falls a lot like Hackenberg, and I think they're different players, and I think Kizer has more upside than Hackenberg showed over 2 bad years at Penn State. But a lot of it where everyone kind of likes Kizer a lot and sees the upside and sees what he could be, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of question marks on if he'll ever get there in the NFL, and I think that's where the question mark is for Kizer as a prospect, and why I think he could fall just like Hackenberg did to the middle to the end of round 2.
And again, I'll mention, of my opinion, I still think that 2015 Kizer is the best quarterback tape out there. And just before we finish this quarterback section, I do want to mention that Tom Pelissero of USA Today noted that he's heard from an NFL source that Bill O'Brien absolutely loves Patrick Mahomes, so there's another person in that corner. And I also want to mention that, again, this is just the quarterback section. I mean, Eric has over 2,000 words on this entire class and just buzz and news and speculation that he's hearing. And go check that out in Sporting News. Let's go to some more positions. Everything that we have heard, well, I won't speak for you, I'll speak for me, is that the NFL really, really likes Leonard Fournette, okay? But they understand his possible shortcomings, his possible questions, in that he might not be a fit for every single NFL team and based on what they're running right now. But what I've heard is they believe he is such a talent that they are willing to alter how they approach their running scheme. I think you wrote something similar to this as well, just about how everyone believes Leonard Fournette is the best talent at the running back position in this class.
Yeah, I only know of two teams that have actually another running back ahead of Leonard Fournette, which we'll get to in a little bit, as a prospect. But different than quarterback, everyone knows Leonard Fournette is a special athlete. The question is, does he fit your scheme to receive a first-round grade, or I think it's a top-10 grade from your team, right? Now, teams will grade their drafts not based off of pure talent, but how that guy fits into their team. I talked to one team who has a 6th-round grade and a possible first-round pick, and they said, hey, we know he's really good, just not a fit for us. So
right.
I think everyone feels Leonard Fournette is a first-round prospect in this class, almost consensually around the league. But the question is, where does he fit? My best comparison is DeMarco Murray. I think you put him in a system where DeMarco Murray thrives, where he can get to the second level and not be in a Philadelphia Eagles situation, which is the best example. That's where Fournette doesn't belong to. A system like the Buffalo Bills, let's say, which let LeSean McCoy thrive. It'd be a system where the Titans or the Dallas Cowboys thrive. Kind of a scheme situation is going to make him one of the best running backs in football. But, you know, people point to his third down issues. Look at the Syracuse game as a game that really shows that he can do a lot of things out of the backfield, more than just being a top-end runner. But I don't think he gets out of the top 8 picks. I know you have the Carolina Panthers kind of plugged in a little bit there, and you can speak to whether the Panthers will for sure take him. I believe they will. But, you know, I think a lot of teams in the top 10, really the even number teams in the top 8 picks, all like Leonard Fournette. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll go 2 overall, but I've been told the 49ers have him graded highly, and they may consider him because I'm not sure they're sold necessarily on Solomon Thomas for sure as a number 2 pick, at least last I heard. But the Jaguars at 4 and the Jets at 6, I think, are both options as well for Leonard Fournette. But I don't think teams in the teens who may have that question mark of whether he fits in the draft, they won't have that question mark on drafted because Leonard Fournette won't get there.
Let's talk about number 8 for a second, because with the Panthers, all that we heard towards the end of the season was this term evolve. At least that's the term Ron Rivera used, that we want to evolve our offense, whatever, whatever. There has been no indication, Eric, this offseason of what that means. Like, they have not changed this offense in the least, okay? They possibly upgraded at left tackle, whatever, and then they lost Ted Ginn, so they're even slower than they were to begin with. So to me, this draft will absolutely dictate what that term means, because it has to, or else they're the exact same team that they were last year. So the question is, which direction does it go in? Does it go in the Leonard Fournette direction, or does it go in the Christian McCaffrey direction, or even someone else possibly? So that's kind of my thing with number eight. And I should mention this. These next 2 weeks for NFL teams, or I guess week and a half, are crucial. And again, the no grade matters until that final grade, right? And we have seen times in the past where, as you just mentioned on a few occasions, prospects have high grades, but then they are slotted below other players due to need, due to other things. And again, these teams that you're mentioning might like these prospects, but in the end, the final grade or the final slotting might not lead them into taking that selection. I do want to mention this name, though, before we finish at running backs, Dalvin Cook. Because mm-hmm. you and I disagree here. Eric, give me your take of Dalvin Cook and if he fits in the first round.
Yeah, for a while I didn't think so. I didn't think Dalvin Cook had a home in round one. And speaking with people at the combine, and one fan in particular said, hey, you know, we like Dalvin Cook a lot, but we're not sure if he will mature and develop as a running back by his second contract. And they wonder if he was going to be a second contract running back for their team. And they feel that he would be a great running back immediately out of college. But having long-term stability in a position like running back, especially in round one, when you're getting a guy for ideally 5 years, you want him to be hitting his peak by year two or three, not necessarily coming on the downslope by year four. So I think Dalvin Cook, for a while, I know teams, the Oakland Raiders, I believe, will not take Dalvin Cook if he's available. They're one team I've been told are totally out, and other teams are as well. But, you know, over the last few weeks, you talked to more teams, and I know two teams picking in round one, both of which could take a running back for sure. I don't know if they will, but they certainly could, that view him as a top running back in this class. So I think there's a handful of teams that still really, really value Dalvin Cook. I think there's more than one team to make him still a first-round grade. I think if he leaves the top, you know, if he goes past the Oakland Raiders, I don't think there's a fit in the back end of round one for a running back like him. I don't think teams are trading up for a guy with character and some minor injury pass as well. But there's a real chance he's either, you know, a top 25 pick or not a first-round pick at all. But I feel confident he'll be the third running back taken in this class, whether it's in the first round or early second round.
What about Garrett Bowles? This is a name, tackle obviously out of Utah, a name that you've mentioned quite a bit early in the process, who's saying, hey, he's going to go early, top 10, top 15. I'm with you, Eric. I mean, we've seen in free agency how much these average to maybe slightly above average tackles get paid, how there's very little tackle talent around the NFL. And in our opinion, Garrett Bowles is the top tackle in this class. But there's just it's difficult to find a fit for me in the top 20. Do you think he's a type of player that teams will try to trade up for, or is there even a maybe not a surprise team in the top 10, but one maybe the connection isn't so strong right now, because the obvious connection is number 20 to the Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think finding a spot for Bowles, and I've said before, I still think he'll be a top 15 pick or top 16 pick, I guess, to hedge my bet a little bit there for the Baltimore Ravens, who may consider him. I think he goes someplace in there, and he's certainly worth it. I'm glad we kind of agree that, you know, despite the age question mark, he's certainly worth it. The question is, I mentioned trading up for Dalvin Cook. Same thing again. Do you trade up for a guy who's going to be, I believe, a 24, 25-year-old rookie as an offensive tackle player who's been a one-year starter at the major college level? That's a question mark that teams will have to answer. And again, just on that point real quick, you don't want to trade more draft capital for a guy who you're not absolutely positive will be an impact player for many years on your team. Because in the draft process, if you had four guys a draft, you're going to be one of the best GMs in football, and losing those opportunities to get a guy who's going to make your second contract is a big deal. But I think Bowles does still go certainly in the top 20. I think everyone knows it'd be a shock if he got past the Denver Broncos at pick 20. The one team I still think could be in play, even though they've added their offensive line this offseason, is the San Diego Chargers. I don't have a good read for them at all. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. I know Malik Hooker seems to make the most sense, but you know, they're not stable on offensive line. They've kind of plugged in some guys here or there, but you'll get both tackles after 2017. I'm not sure they're going to be sold on either one of those guys as a long-term option. And Bowles is a plug-and-play guy, and I know the Chargers are a team that still believes, as they should, that they can compete for one of the best teams in the AFC, even in a strong division. So for a team that feels they're not that far away with Phillip Rivers, maybe in his last 4 or 5 years of his career, I think Garrett Bowles makes sense. But the Jaguars at 4 are looking at offensive linemen. The Chargers at 7 could be a surprise. The Ravens at 16 would love an offensive lineman. So there's still plenty of teams interested in offensive tackles early on, but it's gotten tougher and tougher to find a spot for him.
And it's not just left tackle that people should be looking at. It's I mean, we've seen right tackles go in the top 15 as well. And I mean, that is absolutely a need on many of these teams. Let's go to the wide receiver spot. I'm obviously on record saying that Corey Davis is the top wide receiver in this class, yet I am aware that his process has been completely silent almost. Maybe part of that is due to the minor ankle surgery and not being able to work out the combine, so no private workouts as well. Could Corey Davis conceivably, and in my latest mock, I have him as number, 30 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I see him as from what I've heard later on in the first round. Could you even see him in the second round, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really hard, just like running back, it's hard to find a spot that in the late first round we'll see a receiver go. And historically, late first round is reserved for offensive linemen, defensive backs. For the most part, that's where those guys usually go. So you kind of can expect a lot of those guys in that late first round area. And the fact that he hasn't done a full workout during the NFL draft process is important to some people. I think the more important thing is, what is his special trait? Maybe you could speak to it more because you're a bigger fan of him than we are. And, we've had him as our third rated receiver even before the NFL combine. Just because, a receiver, especially in the top 20, 25 picks, you got to have one really special trait. And we've talked about this before a little bit, but Ross has that vertical speed, obviously at the 4.2, 2.40, but can make so many guys miss at the second level with the ball in his hands. Mike Williams has tremendous high pointing ability. People I talk to, what is Corey Davis's top end value to be a first round grade? Now, that being said, most people I speak with, I think I haven't talked to a team yet that has lower than a second round grade on him, and a lot of teams have, top of the second round grades, which still could make him, a late first round grade. As people know, not every team has 32 first round grades, and by the 20s, teams will take guys they have second round grades on, so certainly possible. But I think I put in that piece as well, he's much closer to a second round pick than he is a top 20 pick. So teams, people mocking him in the top 10, top 15, top 16, I think it's time to kind of let that one go and hopefully find a spot for him in the late first round. But I think early second round, after those three or four guys that are really special players that drop, like Joe Mixon or a surprise first round pick that falls, I think he'll be the first guy taken. I think he goes someplace before, pick 40, 41, 42.
But as you mentioned, also a goal is to get a second round grade sometimes in the early third round as well, because that happens quite a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if John Ross joins him in that area. In fact, in my latest mock, it's tough to peg where someone like John Ross goes. And in fact, I know some teams that have spoken publicly about John Ross, positive things, might not be as confident or as comfortable with him just because of the medical history behind closed doors. What else should we hit? Jonathan Allen. Okay, let's bring up the medical history again. I know many people have speculated that John Allen, because I believe it was Ian Rappaport during the combine period, discussed maybe some potential long-term shoulder arthritis issues for John Allen. And shoulders are a major part of medicals, obviously. And we've seen that numerous times in the past with prospects. However, Eric, you wrote that John Allen is widely viewed as a safe selection. You expect him to go off the board quite early.
Yeah, and I was surprised to hear that too. At the combine, I heard some of those talks with people during the combine process, which is still a lot of information gathering, so you get a lot of raw opinions there, not necessarily what teams are going to do. But I thought the same thing. Hey, he's got shoulder issues, long-term shoulder issues, and those guys almost always fall on draft day because, again, you don't want to take a guy early in the draft that you can't count on to reach a second contract. It just doesn't make sense financially. But as you get closer to the process, more and more teams I talk to have top 10 grades on him, which obviously means that the medical aspect has been kind of a check mark, and they're okay with the medical aspect. I think he's really in play for the second overall pick, despite their dearth of five techniques on the 49ers roster. The Bears at 3 are my expectation for him. They love to trade down and not take him, but he's the best guy on their board after Myles Garrett. So I think they'll take John Allen if he's there at 3. And the Jaguars at 4 might take him because he's the best player on their board. So I think he won't fall far on boards. And I think if we see a lot of movements between pick 2 and 5 and 6, maybe he slips a little bit like Leonard Williams of USC, but he's not going to drop into the teens for sure. And I was surprised to hear that as well, but I think he's you know, he's shown on film he's one of the best players, probably the second best non-quarterback in this class, regardless of what you think of the quarterbacks. And I think he'll go someplace in the top four or five picks for sure.
And with that focus quickly on number two, I know everyone mentions DeForest Buckner and Arik Armstead, but this new staff and front office and whoever has no ties to either one of those prospects, neither one of those players, you know? So
yeah, and I think Arik Armstead, if he's not already, and I've heard a little bit that he may be on the block, but he right. should be. And I think he's a really talented player
Me
that
too.
Was drafted 2 years ago, so they have no ties to him at all, and they can kind of get some return on their investment. I think he's a great fit for Green Bay, as I mentioned before.
Let's stick with another pass rusher, Charles Harris. I mocked him recently to the Philadelphia Eagles today at number 14, which created a stir in Philadelphia. I'm hated there already for previous remarks. You're hearing even higher than 14, Eric. You've heard possibly, what, multiple top 10 grades for Charles Harris?
Yeah, I don't know. Every team's grades are more than half the league's official grades on these guys. But I know that at least some teams who are very good at the evaluation process like Charles Harris as a top 10 player in this draft on the tier of John Allen and Mitch Trubisky for teams that like Mitch Trubisky or Myles Garrett. He's kind of in their level, and teams see his 2015 film as really, really impressive. His 2016 kind of lagged, but showing more of what he can do as a pass rusher, and then his pro day kind of resurfaced right. as a better version of his athletic testing ability. But yeah, I don't think he goes past, you know, I won't say which team. I don't know which team is definitely going to take him, but, you know, the Colts at 15 seem like a perfect spot for him. They've already had a pass rushers in free agency, but he'd be their best guy. But a lot of teams above that. I think you're looking for a pass rusher after Myles Garrett. Solomon Thomas, not as unanimously liked. Again, I know one team that has Harris viewed above Solomon Thomas by a clear margin on their pass rushing board. And I think Harris is going to have a lot more fans. He could be just a fan of just a handful of teams that I know, and maybe he goes someplace a little bit later, but he's not going to get out of the top 25 picks for sure. I think he's going to be a guy that the Jets consider at 6. Maybe your Panthers consider at 8. The Bills at 10 if they don't get Mitch Trubisky. The Saints at 11. The Eagles at 14. The Colts at 15. A lot of teams need a pass rusher. And I think with Tack McKinley kind of being lower on boards than people anticipated, I think Harris is the next man up after Garrett and after Solomon Thomas for some teams, not all teams, some teams. Charles Harris is the next man up, and I think teams are going to take a pass rusher like him in the top 15 picks.
And keep this in mind with Charles Harris. Even after his horrible combine performance where he put up a 9th percentile workout, you didn't see any big draft people drop him on boards, right? I mean, he stayed constant with Kuiper, McShay, Jeremiah, whoever. And for those people that are plugged in to very important NFL people across the league, I think that's very, very telling. And in fact, he's moved up in a lot of their boards as well. That's always something to monitor with some of these prospects. Despite maybe negative parts of their evaluation, nothing changes. And Charles Harris is a good example of that. Plus, he went to his pro day and improved in everything, and I think tested in the 49th percentile. So there's no real question about his athleticism now. Two names, Eric, two names that create a stir in the draft world because of split opinions on them. Jabril Peppers and Obi Melifonwu were both mentioned multiple times in your State of the Draft piece as – not necessarily safe picks, but kind of fallback options. Are these names both two that you keep hearing over and over connected to a number of clubs?
Yeah, and first off, you know, I was surprised to kind of hear the last few days that the safeties might fall in this class after Malik Hooker. And we could see Jamal Adams join Jabril Peppers and Obi Melifonwu after pick 16, like after the first half of round one. And I think all three of these guys could fall on draft day. I was impressed with you that we have Jamal Adams as one of our top five players in this draft class. I think he's worthy of a top 10, 12 pick.
You know, Eric, that doesn't surprise me so much. And I've been kind of pushing that storyline a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just because to me, and look, I understand where Jamal Adams shines. To me, he's excellent defending edge runs. He's excellent on short passes and excellent on screens. But in terms of man-to-man or zone coverages, especially moving backwards in intermediate and downfield portions of the field, I question that. I really do. So it wouldn't shock me at all to see Jamal Adams outside the top 10, even though he is unanimously almost outside of me. Sorry, LSU, for not putting him inside the top 10.
Yeah, and I think there's a handful of teams that agree that he's certainly different than Melifonwu and Jabril Peppers, which makes for an intriguing dynamic because right. they're all three very different defensive backs. Jamal Adams is a true strong safety. Jabril Peppers is, I'm not even sure. And then Hoyt Melifano was a guy who was written into the process because he's a fantastic athlete. But I will say, I think one of the three, if they're there, will be the Dolphins pick at 22. They haven't added a safety, a strong safety this offseason, and really need one. I think that one of those three guys probably will be available, and they'll be the pick for the Dolphins. But there's a lot of teams in the teens that view these safeties high enough, and I think they're kind of in agreement with other people who value Jamal Adams and other safeties highly, is that these are top-end athletes and top-end talents in their position. If we're getting a guy who, even though the position isn't valued highly in the draft, we're getting one of the top few players on our board, we got to get him despite our needs. So we could see, I think, one team certainly could surprise in the 10 to 20 range who are looking for a safety, or not looking for a safety, but might take a guy because he's the best athlete. So the Redskins at 17, the Bucks at 19, teams before them could all look at safeties as well. But the Dolphins at 22, I think one of those safeties, if there, will be the pick.
Anything else you want to hit on? I know you're a big fan of Jordan Willis, and he's finally getting some late first-round buzz, and I would mention the Dolphins as a possibility there. Any other prospects that come to mind or storylines you want to get out?
I think Tack McKinley's been one that's fascinating to see, and he's been a guy I know you've been a fan of and has been mocked in the top 15 picks. But almost without the shoulder surgery or not, he's been considered a late first-round guy, early second-round guy, and could go even later than that. So I think looking for pass rushers, I think Charles Harris and Tack McKinley have kind of flipped their narrative, as in Charles Harris is the guy that's going to be, you know, mid-first round guy, whereas Tack McKinley may fall but on draft day. But the other one, which I think is a curveball to watch out for, is David Njoku of Miami. And he could go much higher than people are anticipating right now in the draft process. And I reported back in February that the Detroit Lions wanted a tight end in the first round, and David Njoku was a logical fit for them because he was viewed as maybe a reach at that point in the process. But you know, he's a guy that's not going to be there at 21 for sure. It might go in the late teens. He could go a lot earlier than that. The Arizona Cardinals are a team that if they don't go Patrick Mahomes and they want to add an instant access point to their offense, who they lost Michael Floyd, they're going to start Troy Nicholas at tight end. They want to add some piece there. No receiver, probably outside of Mike Williams, although he's not a perfect fit for their offense either. Want to add a tight end like O.J. Howard or David Njoku. So I think if Howard goes someplace in the top 10, 12 picks, David Njoku could be really in play for the Arizona Cardinals at 13. He's a guy that, like I said, I don't think gets to the Bucs at 19 to be one of their picks.
And I'll take it one step higher than that, Eric. It would not stun me. I'm not expecting it. I wouldn't be stunned if he's the pick at number 8 to the Panthers. Wouldn't be stunned, but it's
kind of one up me here.
Yeah, it's unlikely, but they've shown plenty of interest in David Njoku throughout the process. And you all should show plenty of interest in what Eric Galco says. Of all this stuff is over at Sporting News, Optimum Scouting, at Optimum Scouting on Twitter. Eric works really hard. He's one of the good guys out there. Someone I've known for, it seems like, 15 years, but he's not even that old. So Eric, I appreciate this, man. Thanks so much, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on.